Welcome to today's South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations conference call. Participation in this call is by express invitation of South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call if South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations did not expressly invite your participation. A question and answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Scott Duke.
Thanks, operator. This is Scott Duke, and I'm also joined by Deborah Owen. And thanks and welcome, everyone. And thank you for taking the time. Want to give a quick update on what's happening both on the federal side of things and also on the state side. So I'll handle the federal side, and Deborah will do that, and then we'll have time for questions at the end. So from a calendar perspective, the Congress is in session. The 115th Congress is in session for the next 3 weeks, and then we'll be taking a break during the President's Day holiday, which is on around the 20th, the week of the 20th. As you've been able to watch and see since the inauguration, it's been busy times in our nation's capital with the inauguration events, the marches, obviously the hearings on the president's cabinet nominees, and a few initial executive orders, and we'll talk about one specifically. From a calendar perspective as well, later this week, the Republican annual retreat will be held in Philadelphia. And so everyone will be leaving town and heading to Philadelphia. It's where they will dive in deeper into the legislative, priorities and issues. And we understand that President Trump and Vice President Pence will be in attendance. So it'll be interesting to see. And we expect the pace of change and activity to pick up even more if it hasn't already been at a little different pace than we've seen within the last several years. Of course, under consideration right now is the first reconciliation bill, which has now gone through the first initial stages, and we sent out kind of a video that AHA put out in a process to track how that all works. It was anticipated that the markup would start actually possibly this week or next week, but at this time, the markup on that first bill is not clear. Again, it is when it will start. We'll know more out of the retreat. But at this point, it's pretty clear that repeal activities, as I said last week, this thing's happening. But what's happening on the other side of that is where kind of all the interest lies, whether it is actually repeal, repair, whatever terminology is used. And of course, ours is to, if you're going to repeal, then you need to replace simultaneously. And we expect that to be a number of years over time. As you'll recall, the governor's meeting last week with the Senate Finance Committee, we don't have a lot of details on that, but we understand they met with the Senate Finance Committee and had good discussions about especially the future for those states that haven't expanded Medicaid. You know, when you think about it, what's happening right now, the 31 states that have expanded, the total expenditure on the federal government side is $72 billion. And so when you talk about repealing that amount of money, how does that money for those states and for those states' budgets and for the states, the 19 who didn't expand, how are they impacted? And a recent report came out in the last day or two that said most states, because of the uncertainty around what's going to happen, have not made changes to their budget. And, of course, South Dakota being fiscally responsible and conservative, and our legislature meeting, the governor's meeting, was important. Recall that the South Dakota Healthcare Solutions Coalition met last week or a week ago, and they are also meeting again tomorrow, and they do plan to set future goals, share some updates, I think, from what the governor learned from a federal developments regarding Medicaid, block grants, and per capita caps and allocation, and also the methodologies around how that might work. Lest you think the answers are all there, they're not. But at this point, it's moving forward, and there's a there's a real important leadership part the governor and his team are playing in making sure that South Dakota, you know, and our congressional delegation are set to be a part of this actively when Medicaid comes into play, probably later this year. Under the executive order side, you've probably seen now, and the analysis is going on with President Trump. Actually, the executive order was broadly entitled to minimize the financial burden of the Affordable Care Act. What's in it, of course, is a lot of rhetoric, but where it's going to go in terms of the immediate impacts and how it will walk out, stay tuned, because until Representative Price is confirmed for the Health and Human Services Secretary, which he's in hearings today in the Senate Finance Committee, is expected to be confirmed, I think more will come to light of what this executive order means. We are closely watching that and working with our national partners to analyze it, and we'll share more information as it becomes available. Also, of course, if you've heard, starting to see some legislation come forward, and a few senators, Cassidy and Collins and others, introduced legislation in the Senate yesterday, which would give, you know, states more options around Medicaid and allow for some clarification about what would be in and what might be out in terms of a replacement or repair plan, but still more analysis is needed there as well. Kind of by wrap up, and then I'll turn it over to you, Deborah, the AHA has been working diligently to help provide information as a part of the transition with President-elect Trump, Vice President-elect Pence now, President and Vice President, and also his transition team. And so to that end, we've given a number of letters, and we've shared those in terms of our priorities, both from a post-acute and an acute care, you know, side that impacts, you know, the nation, but, of course, members in South Dakota. And so another letter is being put together to add more clarity to the top priorities. And essentially, it's the same messaging we've heard with a little emphasis on, you know, repeal and replace simultaneously or return the funding from cuts that were made prior to the passage of the ACA going back to 2010. Now, although that's a very heavy lift, Gil and our team has put together a facility-by-facility analysis of what it would look like going out to 2026 if there was repeal without replace. And it's a very scary number, approximately $1.8 billion, with a B, that would be reduced funding for our members in South Dakota through the next 10 years. So, again, that field unity, the message that says you can't repeal this without replacing it or repairing it simultaneously, is getting traction, and we need to continue pressing that message, and we really thank you all for your work on that. Finally, as we look to the future, there's one piece around, you know, even with all this going on, that continues to get discussion, and that's a second reconciliation bill, and I mentioned it last week. Still more to come on that, likely to come in the summer or fall timeline we're hearing, and would include these considerations, the changes to the Medicaid program, and also possibly tax reform. So let me end there, and then we'll have time for questions, and I'll turn it over to Deborah. Deborah?
Zuri, can you unmute Deborah, please?
Hello, Ms. Deborah, please proceed.
Thank you so much. Thank you for thank you, Scott, for your update. I always appreciate your thoughts, and hello and welcome, everybody. I am talking to you from Pierre, South Dakota. It is snowing here. I suppose it's probably snowing in your neck of the woods as well. But we're having fun up here in Pierre, at least we're trying to, amidst all of the challenging bills that we have before us. Thus far, the Public Policy Council has reviewed about 18 bills and taken positions on that. And since we are, in terms of our legislative calendar, we are in week three. We're just beginning week three. So this is legislative day nine. Just a reminder, in terms of our calendar, it is a nine-week session, and our main runs ends on March 10th. So we are fairly busy, but having fun up here on your behalf in advocacy. And then also I just wanted to tell you a little bit more about some of the deadlines that will happen during this nine-week period, specifically the next 2 weeks, is we'll have the end of what a legislator would be able to, what we call drop a bill, to submit a bill for signatures and then turn it in so that it would actually become public for committee action. So this Thursday is the last day for unlimited bills and a joint resolution introduction. And then on January 31st, next Tuesday, is when all bill drafts and their sponsors are due back at our Legislative Research Council. And then on Thursday of next week, which is February 2nd, it is the last day for introduction of individual bills and joint resolutions. So we are nearing the end of our first, our first threshold in terms of seeing what's going to be out there in terms of newly introduced bills. And then moving over to current issues, and I'll talk a little bit about future issues as well. Of those 18 bills, we have a number of the bills that have come forward from the summer interim studies. We have the long-term care bills, and we had a bill this morning in particular that has been a bill that the Public Policy Council has taken a position of opposition to, and that actually passed out of committee, so we're working hard on your behalf. There will be advocacy alerts sent out shortly, if not already, sent to you for you to contact your legislator, encouraging them to vote no on House Bill 1003. And this is would be the transfer and sale of nursing beds throughout South Dakota. So we think this is actually harmful, specifically to rural communities, if this bill should pass. And so we appreciate all your help with lobbying your legislators moving forward. The second round of bills I want to talk a little about is the opioid bills, in particular Senate Bill 1 and 2, and I touched on that last week. Senate Bill 2 is actually tabled, which was great efforts on our whole health system advocacy group to get that tabled. Senate Bill 1, though, is doing well. That has a compromise provision, an amendment added to it that would simply require prescribers to register with a prescription drug monitoring program. Sometimes we call that the PDMP, which is a much better answer in terms of the Senate Bill 2. And then also I want to touch base a little bit on the restrictive access. There's been a number of stories out in regular news, and certainly we've had that on our website as well, in terms of senators wanting to restrict access to them, in particular between 8 and 5, for lobbyists, blue badges, and alike. So that was tabled, and we're grateful for that. Obviously, we do a lot of our work in the halls, and in spite of what IM22 said, most of us don't wine and dine legislators all night long. So we actually just do a lot of our communications face-to-face. And then I want to touch base a little bit on IM22. There was a joint hearing yesterday in the House, a joint hearing between House and Senate, about a three-hour hearing on IM22, and the vote was to repeal IM22, even though it has had preliminary injunction against it to be as unconstitutional for a number of provisions. The House and Senate are working on actually repealing it on their own before there is a final determination by the court. So the House voted to pass it, to table that, and then it will go to the House, I think, today for a vote, and then on to the Senate. And we're not sure if the Senate will have additional hearing in committee or if they will simply just vote straight out on the floor. So that's kind of how that's going. We'll keep you up to date on that progress and how that proceeds. There are a number of measures as well in terms of ethics boards and gift requirements and stipulations and limits to and different bills, trying to kind of capture what the public's intent was for IM22, but there'll be more to come on that later. And then also the Public Policy Council met last week, as we do every week. We met on Thursday, and they took a position, on Senate Bill 43, which had to do with expanding intensive meth treatment services with the Department of Social Services, and the council voted to support that bill. Then there's Senate Bill 50, which was an act to authorize the submission of an application for a state innovation waiver regarding health insurance and to declare an emergency. That was also to support that bill. That really is a 1332 waiver authorization for the Division of Insurance regarding if that could be a possible tool for us in terms of health insurance down the road. And then Senate Bill 57 is an act to authorize the operation of a nursing home facility in Eagle Butte, South Dakota. Just to note, this bill actually wouldn't take any beds from the existing moratorium beds. This actually was to reauthorize a bill that happened in 2003, as the Eagleview project has taken longer to get done than what it was anticipated originally. So the council voted to support that bill as well. And then lastly, there's Senate Bill 61, an act to update, revise, and repeal certain provisions relating to nurse practitioners and nurse midwives. If you've gone to one of our legislative forums, you would have known this was the APRN bill that we talked about there. And the Public Policy Council took a position of to be neutral on this, in part because the systems both employ docs and nurses, and so they decided to remain neutral for that. And then moving to future issues, we have House Bill 1058. This is a bill that's pretty much a placeholder bill for now. It's a bill to empower healthcare consumers. It's what it's, what it's titled as. But it's really missing a lot of the language within the body of the bill to how that would actually be achieved through law. And so we're just watching that, but we want to give you a heads up. That's a pretty much an any willing provider bill. And the sponsors, the primes on that would be Dave Anderson and Senator Partridge. And so we know that they have a big concern about hospitals owning their own health insurance plans, and so we are watching that bill with some anticipation to see what is coming forward when they actually add language to that bill. And then lastly, I wanted to give you an update on the midwifery bill. That is not dropped yet, but we have worked diligently to try to prepare that to have the least amount of damage should it pass. We know that at one of these years it's going to. We will work, of course, with great diligence to kill it, if you will. But we also understand that we're looking at the numbers from the last year's vote that this bill has actually evolved from. And so we know that it's a challenging, a daunting work ahead of us. But we have done a number of revisions, and Debbie Pease, who is their main lobbyist, has been willing to put a number of provisions in place for us. Not all that we asked for, but a great deal of what we asked for. So we're glad to have at least strengthened that in terms of protecting our own providers. And I think that is it for me, so I'm going to turn it back over to Scott.
Thank you, Deborah, and appreciate the work there and Pierre. And we look forward to hearing from you now with questions. I will say just a couple reminders as we go to questions. One, please look for that voter voice. We're trying to work on, of course, the current bills that are out there. So when those come out, there's a link to the Cracker Barrels that are occurring, and there's a number, Mitchell this Friday, and then Spearfish, Brandon, Vermilion, and Webster on Saturday, and that link is on our website. And then just regular updates with our eLedge to keep all of you both up to speed where we're at and then interactive and engaged in the process. So with that, operator, let me go to invite questions.
Thank you, Mr. Duke. And at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, press 0 followed by a 1 on your touchtone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you have a question, press 0 followed by a 1 now. Please hold for a moment as our assistant compiles your responses. And at this time, we do not have any questions in the queue.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thanks, everyone, and appreciate it. Stay safe in the winter weather, and we will look forward to holding the call again next week, same time. Thank you.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.